2 Football Podcast.
Hello and welcome to the V2 Football Podcast. I'm your host this week, Anthony Kendrick, and I'm joined by Nick Davey.
Good evening.
Shane Lees.
Hi.
And Richard Hero Hudson.
Good evening.
Is everyone well?
No.
What's wrong, Shane?
Really. I'm still a bit ill from my holiday.
I'm tired. I've been doing interviews. I'm tired of interviews. It's just a lot of interviewing.
I'm marvellous.
Just hire me.
Just
fucking hire me.
We'll start with the biggest news of the week. We probably won't talk about it too long as we've done it a lot in previous shows, but Pogba has confirmed his move to Man United for $89 million. Good signing for United?
Yes, very good signing. Like, the money aside, he would go in at pretty much any side in the world, and he is a Mourinho-style player.
What do you mean by that?
He likes big, strong, central midfielders that will run at the opposition.
Uh-huh. Okay.
But
he likes physical players, doesn't he?
Yeah, he does. No, to say he at Chelsea it worked a treat, both first and second time round for one season. I think it's a good sign. I think I'll probably touch on it later on, but I think it's just the final cherry on the top of United being my prediction to win the league.
It is a good sign. I don't see anyone really arguing, saying, oh, he's not a good player, unless it's just the idiots who are going on, I don't know, comment sections, message boards, who are just trying to stir things up. Yeah, that's a good signing. I don't think anyone's going to argue that. It's just money is just so stupid. Come on, even as a United fan, you've got to say.
We really don't have a problem with it.
Can I just point out, BBC posted something today, and as a percentage of United's turnover, it's not the biggest signing. They've made it similar, equivalent to the Rooney
million. It's way down the list.
Well, Varon and Ferdinand are the two biggest signings as a percentage of turnover.
There was two higher. I know it's going back a bit, but Brian Robson was 60% of the turnover, and Dennis Law was about 7%.
But I make the more obvious point that money isn't all relative. It's still £89 million is £89 million. I'm not. You're bringing in £100 million.
It is relative though.
It's £89 million, and the consequences aren't just to Man United economics. I think that's the whole argument people make. We're not saying, oh, it's a lot of money to United. Yes, Man United could afford it. They wouldn't sign him if they couldn't afford it. It's the whole, now that's a benchmark. That kind of player is £89 million. The whole consequence is the bigger, not just United. That's what people are going, what the hell is going on here? Because before that was...
Gareth Bale was £86 million. I think everybody...
Yeah, Bale was amazing.
It's
not a question of top quality. It's a question of how many games are they going to win you. That kind of money was reserved for going to win you 30 games in the season.
Bale's
maybe the one that last changed that, and then Pogba's the one that's completely confirmed that.
So do you think Bale for £85 million was wrong, or is that okay?
I think that was a little bit. If you'd said £60 million, £50 million, I'd have said that's a bit more close to what his actual value is. But obviously he was signed again for the same sort of reason Pogba was. There was a lot of idea about potential there, and it's supposed to be a replacement for Ronaldo. But it's again that question of, how many games in the season are they going to win you? Because that kind of money is Messi level, it's Ronaldo level, they are going to win you 30 games in the season. That's how much they're going to be able to contribute. Because Pogba is a midfielder, especially, not an attacker, you have to wonder how many games in the season are affected at that level that he wins those games almost single-handed. Mm-hmm. I think, as a midfielder, no matter how good you are, you're not really 10.
Well, Graham Souness said on Sky Sports that he didn't think Pogba was that good, that he doesn't see him dominate games, grab games by the scruff of the neck often enough to be worth that kind of money. So I guess
I don't actually agree. This is the thing I'm saying. Pogba is a very good player, there's no question about it, and I do think he'll probably be the best central midfielder of his generation. But it's about the whole greater consequence. That suddenly is now the benchmark for money. That's the kind of money you're going to spend. So if £89 million is for a central midfielder, the world-class central midfielder, the next world-class striker, how much is he going to now cost? How much can the club who own him say, you're going to pay this much? Are we going to go past £100 million? No question. But how much further? It's not about the consequences to United. Because at the end of the day, we're not talking about this money compared to inflation and all that sort of stuff, and modern economics. It's a completely insular market, and the money's going completely out of hand at this point, because it isn't even relative to the rest of the world anymore.
I don't think it's because of the United transfer that the transfer market's suddenly gone mental. Like, before Pogba was signed, then Liverpool were buying Manier off you for £30 million.
Oh, and I didn't say that was any kind of smart either. No, it's not Man United. they've suddenly decided that the whole transfer window is going to go crazy. It's that it's like the nail in the coffin. It's the, we could turn this around. Football's not in a position where we're so far gone that we can continue down this route of just commercialisation and crap and branding and, you know, forgetting that football is about, oh, I don't know, fans and community and the love of the game and sports. We were not so far past that point where we couldn't go back. This is one of those things that saying we're now going past that line. We're crossing that line. We were edging on it. Still could turn around. Probably gone past.
The toothpaste will never go back in the tube.
I don't know. It's got to get in there at some point.
Let's move on to another transfer then. I'm sure you'll agree with the transfer fee on this one. What do we make of John Stones moving to Manchester City?
That's it. People complain about the Pogba transfer. Pogba is a three-time Serie A winner. It was pretty influential in those three Serie A wins. You know, he got in the team of the year, I think, every single year. He was in the FIFA World team of the World Cup last year, FIFA World team. John Stones had one decent season, and last season was pretty poor.
Yeah, he couldn't even get into the England team.
I'm not going to argue, you know, for it. Yeah, it's a bloody daft signing. It's the second most expensive defender in history. Only the top most two most expensive defenders in history.
Oh, he is the expensive.
No, David Luiz is still...
David Luiz was 50.
Yeah, so the two most expensive defenders in history can't really defend that well. But they can pass the ball really nicely. That's what you want. I mean, yes, it's stupid. It's that point now where we're saying if you're a young player, you've got that potential, this is how much money you're going to go for. And when you're doing that again with English players especially, it just pushes the market up even further. So you get these players who aren't actually that great going to these big clubs, then they don't play so much football because they're going to go ahead and sign some other fancy name foreign player. And suddenly you've got the players, these English players at these big clubs who can't be bought by the other clubs now because they've just got too much money that they're going to lose from that transfer. So they drift away and the talent drifts away and it all just goes away.
With
John Stones,
let's be a bit positive. Can I put a positive spin on it?
Go for it.
He's a young English talent. Would working under Guardiola, playing Guardiola's style of play, really do him any harm?
Oh, I think he's a perfect Guardiola defender.
Yeah, I agree.
Making him become England's best centre back.
I think at 47.
Particularly great for the Premier League.
I think for the kind of money they've spent. They've got to play John Stones. He's got to be their first choice, and I think he's going to trust him over Mangala and, you know, Otamendi, I'm presuming Company plays. That's a bold presumption to make.
This is the thing. What I was saying about Pogba, it's not a question about the player has the ability. John Stones has the ability. Here's the thing I'm thinking. How long is Guardiola going to last in the Premier League? Because yes, he'll have a good impact on Stones' career, hopefully. Let's say Guardiola lasts, I don't know, 3 years. He's not done that much longer than any other player. 3 years.
Okay.
Who else comes in after that? And then do they go ahead and say, oh, well, this guy's the world's best defender at this point. So, I don't know, Bonucci, someone like that. They can go, we got Man City money. John Stones, he's still making mistakes because he's that kind of defender. He will always make mistakes. He can't be that kind of defender and not make mistakes. How long before he's looked at as being, I don't know, maybe a bit of an expensive English flop? Yeah, it's one of those things because if he ever gets to that point, with this kind of money, there is no going to that. You can't move to Stoke. You were £47 million, can't move to Stoke. It doesn't work that much.
Man City have spent, trying to find a partner for Vincent Kompany, £175 million on
centre. They could have probably cloned Vincent Kompany with that money.
I would have done a better job than Mangala. No, who was the other clown? Dean Michaelis.
There was Mangala, there was Otamendi.
Lescott,
yeah.
Comes to mind, doesn't it, really?
Alright, shall we move on to Arsenal? Arsenal look like they're struggling for centre-backs due to the injuries. It looks like Rob Holding of Bolton, who they signed from Bolton, might make his debut this weekend. The other thing, they've been linked with Mustafi, and it looks like they've put in a bid, which has been accepted today.
He's a solid centre-back, certainly.
Oh yeah, but it's again, it's one of those good situations where you get a very good signing and all that sort of thing. 2 points, though. You're sort of going, Rob Holding, what were you really signed for? Was that just, you know, sort of, I don't know, paperwork, we need some more English players, all that sort of stuff. And then you look at the signing Mustafi and you go, so they basically just don't care about tapping up anymore. I mean, they basically say, so long as you're talking to the agents, it's all okay. I mean, it's not even a thing anymore, is it? They don't punish it at all.
We'll look at Swansea. They've lost Ashley Williams to Everton. Big loss for them, I think.
Great signing for Everton, I think. I think Ashley Williams is a top centre back, and so I think, you know, Arsenal missed a trick on him a few years ago. I think he could have won Arsenal Premier League title, maybe 1-0. I think he's a real leader on the pitch. He knows the Premier League well. I think already at the top of my head, I can just think of that captain's performance he gave when Swansea beat Arsenal 2-1 last year. Given that Swansea manager went into hospital a couple of hours before the kickoff.
Williams really stepped up to the plate, really acted like a leader on the pitch. And well, I think we saw him with Wales as well in the Euros. Mm-hmm. I think that was a top signing for Everton. And as I say, him and they've got some good centre backs there now. I think they've got him, Mori, and Gagielka.
Yeah. The thing is, 12 million, considering his age, is that an excessive amount of money to pay? Or is it?
I think it is, you know. I think 12 million's good. How old is he, 28?
31, I thought he was.
Yeah, it's quite a pen with that, but you could probably get another good 5 seasons out of him. John Terry, look at him, he's still probably the best centre back. It's the best centre back in the Premier League still probably. What is he, 30? He's pretty old. So no, I think 12 million could be about justified, especially if Everton go get into Europe.
What do we think of the also Everton link with Bolasie? I know, Rich, have you got a bit to say about him?
I just think that Everton are looking at Liverpool spunking away 30 million on Manya and thinking that we want to do the same.
Yeah, I can't get that.
He's a 1-in-10 player. He looks great when he's on TV like Manya does and then just fades into obscurity. Crystal Palace fans are absolutely loving the prospect of getting rid of him for that moment.
Well, yeah, my mate's a Palace man at work and he was saying that whilst he is fun to watch, he doesn't do much really. I mean, he's not like he'll run past players and it's fun. Yes, he gets people off their seat and everything, enjoys it. But there's not really any end product. It's not. He doesn't throw a great cross here, and then he doesn't score a lot of goals. So I think at 30 million, they could really invest that well, Palace. I mean, especially they could use it to get a good striker, which they need. No secret they need last season. They've already got a better player than Bolasie and Townsend. So I think Palace could be would be laughing away to the bank. I think.
If I was
Palace, what I'd be doing at the moment is, what about 30 million? I'd be thinking, we could try a cheeky bid for Oxlade-Chamberlain with that. Because if you're Palace and you can attract a good calibre of player, if you've got that kind of money and you're thinking, we want to make a statement to the fans, we want to spend big, you could attract a player of that calibre. I mean, obviously, maybe Oxlade-Chamberlain's not the best example because I think he's injured at the moment, isn't he? But if I was them at the moment, I think you could get a player who is at least going to be as exciting and good as Bolasie, who is maybe a little bit more consistent when he plays.
Mm-hmm.
And Oxlade Chamberlain as well must be thinking that I'm stagnating at the moment.
Well, I see Wenger said it's a massive season for him in his career.
Well, the same for Walcott as well. You know, both of them must be thinking, you know, I came here as a teenager to this club, and have I actually progressed?
Walcott gets worse by the season.
Both those players need to get away from that club.
I didn't just see what you mean. It would be, I think, for them, they've got a great. If they can't get 30 million from us, they've got a good chance to really make a name for themselves in this window. I think striker. I mean, have they signed any strikers or am I missing it? Link Benteke and Berardino.
There's been all this Benteke. No, they've not signed Benteke.
Benteke. I mean, I know Liverpool want 30 million for him, but to be honest, would he really be that bad for Palace?
He'd do well for Palace, but.
Well, going back to the Pogba deal and the revenue coming in, the Crystal Palace. It's £15 million for Crystal Palace to have a comparable transfer to what United get for Pogba. £30 million is a massive investment for them.
I think when you look at sort of what Everton are spending, you've got a perfect example of how football is just absolutely mad at the moment with money. One minute they sell Stones, which is silly money. Then they buy Williams for fairly reasonable money. And then they do the same thing that they've just had done for my city and spunk at £30 million for Bolasie. It just doesn't really make... I genuinely think people are literally pulling these figures out of their arse when they're trying to come up with figures for how much a player should cost. It's literally, maybe it's this much. You're paying the money for small countries' economies at the moment, players. Well, how come Bolasie's worth £30 million? Williams worth £10 million? Pogba's worth £18 million? Where do these figures actually come from? I genuinely want to know.
The thing is, so just going back to John Stones... with John Stones, do you think it's fair to... Like, 5-10 years ago, Everton would have... Say if they'd got a bid, I don't know, 20 million, they'd have had to accept it. But now, with the TV money, they can get away with, you know, keeping him. They can afford to keep their players. They're not forced to sell anymore in the same way they once were.
That's true. It swings and roundabouts, because as much as you now want more money from the smaller clubs, you've got more player power. Mm-hmm. I mean, if a player is refusing to play, if a player is, you know, just causing all kinds of trouble in you, the dressing rooms, all that kind of thing, eventually you're going to say... This isn't worth it. Sure, maybe 3 months down the line he's going to get reasonable. That's 3 months of productivity we've lost. That's a player we've lost all that time bitching and moaning to all these other players. And he's going to have friends in that dressing room and they're going to be concerned about that kind of thing. So it's either way, and I think it depends the kind of players you've got. If you've got a player where you can say, we're going to going to reject this bid for you. And they're like, yeah, sure. Okay, I'll do some hard work and maybe I'll even get a better club at the end. Or maybe I'll be, you know, a captain here or something like that. But yeah, it's a great thing about it. If you have the players like, I know we've had at Southampton in recent years, I think like you kind of get at Everton, then I think maybe you still don't have the power in your hands.
All right. I just want to go back to Ashley Williams. We mentioned it's a great signing for Everton. That seems to be the consensus. Just want to look at it from a Swansea point of view. Do you worry about Swansea and their future? They've signed Llorente and Bascon, two strikers. And, you know, I think they're going to be in serious trouble next year.
Llorente's a bit of an odd signing. He's not really done much for a few years now. Bascon's a good one, though, because I presume he's got a buyback with that.
I'm not sure. I know they've got him for 15 million. I don't know.
He was absolutely banging them in the La Liga last season.
Yeah, he played for Eibar, didn't he? I think he scored like 18 goals, something like that. I don't have a figure to
have. Yeah, but he was still owned by Atletico.
Yeah.
And Atletico bought Kevin Gamero for, was it something like 30 million?
Yeah.
And he scored two goals less than Bascon, who they already owned.
Yeah, it's one of those situations with Swansea where. My opinion is that as much as you could say this year, as Borja Pella, you might be good, you might absolutely bang them in the Premier League. What they've done is they've sold a proven Premier League captain, a player who will win you games over the season, or at least stop you losing them. And what they've done is they've brought in risk. Players who've not done the Premier League, players you don't know what they're going to do. You've got an older player who knows if he's still got the same kind of motivation he had before. Maybe he's looking at this as an opportunity for Premier League payday. And you've got another player who is, again, unproven in this league. So it's one of those situations where you think, if you're potentially fighting relegation, the last thing you want is risk. What you want is proven Premier League quality. You want to say, Ashley Williams, we will do anything to keep you at this club. You're the captain here. Fans love you. Just tell us what you want and we'll try and do that. Because I don't think Everton is so appealing. But, you know, he wouldn't have turned around and said, actually, maybe there is something double my wages. Some of that. Swansea should have tried so much harder to keep. And they should have been going for more Premier League standard quality.
Okay.
I think a few of us thought last week that Swansea were going to be on a relegation battle this year. And I think this puts a big exclamation mark on that's going to be happening.
I still think that'll be all right.
Okay. Just final transfer I want to mention. Sunderland have signed Man United pair. It's not Fellaini and Januzaj. It's Paddy McNair and Donald Love. They've got 5.5 million for them two. It looks like Januzaj might follow. McNair did. McNair had a good season. Period.
Yeah, McNair's not a bad signer.
Donald Love, I think.
I've never heard of him.
He played two or three times for United under Van Gaal last season with all the defensive injuries. He seemed okay, but, you know, not enough time to make a proper opinion, I suppose.
Not as good as Wolford Jackson or...
No, he didn't have that sort of impact, no. But yeah, it looks like Januzaj might go to Sunderland. He seems pretty angry at his treatment. He said he's not going to accept a loan deal and only wants a permanent transfer, according to the paper. So, yeah. Are there any other transfers anyone wants to mention?
Oh, let's talk about all the Southampton transfers that are way
behind now. Anyone you hope to bring in before the window ends, Shane?
Yeah, a striker. We've got Charlie Austin. His legs don't work.
What about Shane Long?
It's Shane Long as well, but he's someone you can rely to, you know, fight for whoever is playing alongside him. You're not going to necessarily rely on him to get 20 goals in a season, are you? Good player, very good player. I personally love him at Southampton. Where's Pella? He's
gone
to China and now
China.
Fourth highest earning player in the world. Absolutely ridiculous. But we need a striker, and especially when you don't necessarily know if you've got a manager who's going to do it in the Premier League again, because it's completely unproven. You want a Premier League striker who's going to, you know, just bang in the goals, and you know that you're going to get that from him. We've got one striker who is not famed for getting goals with the hard work, and another one who's famed for having his legs not work for half a season.
All right, well, on that note, we'll move on to the first round of this week's quiz. So this week, because it's the Premier League opening weekend, this quiz concerns, the Premier League opening weekend and over history. So it's two rounds. The first round is the club you support. In Nick's case, he's nominated Tottenham as his team, as Brighton, unfortunately, aren't in the Premier League. Following that, there'll be a general knowledge round each in the second round of the quiz, which will be later in the show. Shane, as we were discussing Southampton, I guess you can go first. All right, so you've got five questions about Southampton on the opening day. Question one. Southampton lost to Manchester City in their first game back in the Premier League in 2012, but what was the score in that game?
3-2.
Was indeed correct. What was the score last season in your opening day game against Newcastle?
1-1.
It was 2-2, I'm afraid.
I knew it was a bloody joke.
In what year did Southampton last win on the opening day of the Premier League season?
Oh, Christ. It's going back to the cow, isn't it? 2004.
And that was more recently than that. 2013, you beat West Brom.
Oh, Christ, yeah.
1-0 win.
That was away from home, wasn't it?
It was. It was, yeah, I think
Ricky
so.
Lambert scored a penalty.
Yeah, yeah. How did I forget that?
Okay, Gordon Strachan managed Southampton to a 2-2 draw against Leicester in what year?
Oh shit, I know this one.
Southampton.
I'm going to go with, was that 2008?
Is that your guess?
Yeah.
2008, you're 5 years out, it's 2003.
I'm really tired.
Weirdly, I was thinking 2008 as well, and I was thinking like, wow, you've gone the same.
Okay, final question. Why did manager Ronald Koeman not attend the opening day last year?
Oh, he had like a broken leg or some shit.
Yeah, I'll tell you.
He was having surgery for fucked up legs.
Yeah, he had an Achilles tendon operation. Yeah, I'll give you that. So that's 2 out of 5 in the first round. But it can all be made back in the second round. Richard, would you like to go next?
Go on then.
Your 5 questions are on Man United. So who did Man United lose to on the opening day, prompting the famous quote from Alan Hansen that you won't win anything with kids?
Oh, so that was back in 92, I presume.
Can't win anything with kids.
It was Villa, wasn't it?
It was Villa, but I thought it was in 94. I don't know, that wasn't the question, but yeah.
It wasn't in 94, because he
can't win anything with kids.
I remember it was Villa, anyway.
Cristiano Ronaldo made his debut in 2003 against Bolton on the opening day. But what was the score in that game?
3-0.
Sorry, Rich, it was 4-0. Who did Louis van Gaal lose to in his first Premier League game as United manager?
Pretty much everybody.
Louis van Gaal, mate.
It was Swansea, wasn't it? Because it was like that was our European adventure that season. The two games, and we lost both legs against Swansea.
It was Swansea. Yeah, it was. Which goalkeeper did David Beckham beat to score from the halfway line in 96?
Beckham from the halfway line.
Would it have been? Wouldn't have been Besson still that time. Was it something like Sagers or something like that?
Something like what,
sorry? Sagers?
No, it was Neil Sullivan. Ruud van Nistelrooy scored twice to beat Fulham 3-2 on the opening day in what year?
2004?
2001. So you also have 2 out of 5. Right, so Nick, over to you for the final part of the first round.
Thank you.
So first question is, what year did Jurgen Klinsmann make his debut for Spurs, scoring and celebrating with an Olympic dive?
1996?
94. Who scored an own goal last season in the 1-0 loss to Man United on the opening day?
I think it was Kyle Walker.
It was indeed. Pochettino's first game at Spurs ended up with an Eric Dier 93rd minute winner against which side?
That was West Ham United.
It was. Who was the Tottenham manager on the opening day of the 2013 season?
I think it was AVB.
It was. Which unlikely scorer scored the winner in a 2-1 win over Liverpool in 2009?
This is where Premiership years comes into play. Sebastian Besson?
No, it was Beno Asuikokoto, the left-back. So, after that, you have 3 out of 5, see? You're in the lead, Nick.
I was watching.
All right, after that, we've got Nick and Richard and Shane on 2 each, and Nick's on 3, so we'll see how it goes in the second part.
So the person that's picking a club that isn't even his club is doing better than the people that have their clubs.
Yeah, basically.
I blame Dominic. To be fair though, like, I mean, Tottenham, I've always got like a sort of soft spot. No, I mean, some of the questions that you are, Shane, I think I knew as well. When it comes to the opening day, I'm well intimidated about the season. I always remember a lot of stuff about it. Cause it's just, I don't know. I think it's because I watched quite a bit of Premiership years, and the opening day is just one that always just sort of staples in. If it was like questions on like, can you name like the Boxing Day results? I wouldn't have a clue, or the Last Day results. I probably wouldn't have a clue. But the opening day is always sort of.
All right, we'll move on. No, Nick, you have a League Cup we've talked through.
Yeah, well, I won't do it for long, because I know how much Hero loves the Football League chat. But as I say, a bit of a spin-off from our 72 show, which will be returned in September. The League Cup first round did take place this week, featuring 70 of the the league clubs, obviously excluding Newcastle and Norwich. But the big upset for me was at Kenilworth Road, Luton beating Villa 3-1.
Mm-hmm.
So Villa, two games, two defeats now. Big win for Luton, obviously managed under former Brighton assistant Nathan Jones. That was one of the big standout ones for me. Also last night, Leeds nearly going out to Fleetwood, having to win by penalties. The same went for QPR as well against Swindon Town at Losses Road. So they're both narrowly avoiding upsets. But on Tuesday, there were more upsets. We saw Barnsley losing at home to Northampton. Obviously, we mentioned a lot on the show how well they did on the show last year. Birmingham losing 1-0 at home to Oxford.
Mm-hmm.
Big upset. Sheffield Wednesday losing 2-1 at Cambridge. See Wednesday to what's the playoffs final last year? Big win for Cambridge there. Newly promoted Cheltenham beat Charlton 1-0. Exeter beat Brentford 1-0. Ipswich losing at home to Stevenage 1-0. A bit of a thriller in London derby between Ored and Fulham. Fulham 3 up and coasting, but Ored got it back to respectful 3-2. And we're unlucky not to take the game to extra time. We also saw MK Dons. They were 2-0 down at Newport with 3-2. We saw Oldham beat Wigan 2-1. Rotherham lost 4-5 again, put it tied the round against Morecambe. What a tie that was. Goal. So who says the League Cup's crap? You see games like that. I mean, what a game that was. So Morecambe winning 4-5. I mean, the amount of times they took the lead in that game, it was quite an incredible match.
What was it? 3-3 at full time, wasn't it?
It was, yeah. So extra time was a bit of a... It was pretty mental. I saw there was like loads of late goals in that game. What a game, though. And Alan Stubbs not off to a great start, as well. And he was a... Drew away 2-0 lead on Saturday against Wolves and drew 2-2. So he's obviously 7 goals conceded in 2 games. So I think he's obviously needs to know where he's going wrong there. Sheffield United lost 2-1 to Crewe. Obviously Crewe relegated out of League 1 last year and in League 2 now. Another Championship exit was Huddersfield. Lost 2-1 against Shrewsbury. And yeah, about all the upsets. Some ties to the second round that may be of interest. Conquerors of Villa, Luton, they host Leeds in the next round. Should be a good tie there. Big boys Liverpool, they go to Burton Albion, and obviously lose the Championship. We've got Chelsea, they will host, Chelsea, a funny one, they will host either Bristol City or Bristol Rovers, I believe, depending on what happens in the Cardiff-Bristol Rovers game tonight. It's obviously funny how the draw's done, given it's all seeded and there's still one game to play tonight. Big shout-outs to the supporters of Hull. They had to go all the way down to Exeter on the Tuesday night for the Capital One Cup game. I can't imagine many supporters would be queuing to get tickets for that one. And but also Yeovil Town, a massive game for them. They go up to Everton. But obviously another long journey there. That's probably about it for me. I think they're on the review of the cup. I don't know if you guys want to.
I just think it's interesting that it's now called the EFL Cup rather than the League Cup or the Carling Cup or the something.
I called the League Cup.
I know it's just a strange name for it.
Yeah, it's not really nice. I mean, well, it's better than the I suppose it's better than the Checker Trade EFL Trophy Cup.
I don't know. I feel like it needs a sponsor though. I don't know if it was a choice not to have a sponsor or whether it was.
Nobody was into
it. I don't know. Yeah.
Well, yeah, because Checker Trade sponsoring the pack, well, what was known as the Johnson's Paint Trophy.
Yeah, the Checker Trade Trophy. I'm sure we'll be discussing that on the 72 show in a few months' time.
Indeed. Yeah, indeed.
All right. I just want to talk about football coverage in general, the Premier League coverage, because it's changing a bit this season. We've got the new slot, the Friday night games, which means, well, I guess we've got a longer weekend of football. And it's probably better from a TV and, an entertainment point of view. It's, another game, more games on TV. But is this something that's good for the fans, do you think?
Well, Friday night and Monday night games are always quite difficult for supporters to get to. But to be honest, it's always worrying. They've always had Championship games on Friday night. So I think Friday night football's fantastic for me, being a neutral fan. I think it's fantastic. To see. So I think a lot of people going in the pub on Friday night, so it'd be nice to have a bit of football on.
I think it might be good actually for a few of the clubs, especially ones like United, where it's a home game on a Friday night, because it'll stop all the ones from all around the country, etc., coming along for the game. So it'll hopefully be a bit more of a local atmosphere for it.
Yeah, oh yeah, I see what you mean, yeah.
United have got both, they've got, is it Southampton, haven't they? on a Friday night game.
It's a week. A week on Friday, second week.
Yeah, because we're it's Championship game tomorrow night because we're at Hunter Forest. Then I think next week it's United Southampton.
Well, it's Rachel Riley and Jeff Stelling who are hosting it. Right, there's a new BBC midweek show as well. I hope it's not competition for us, but they're doing a new midweek Premier League show. I know Jurgen Klopp's going to be on the first one as well. So that's more new coverage for us to enjoy.
There it is. Like, I wouldn't mind if they were doing something a bit more focused on but Premier League, they do it in Match of the Day. What more are they going to do? Yeah, I mean, I think that if they decide to do a more focused football league to try and like, increase the interest in all that kind of thing, yeah, that'd be the kind of thing I'd watch. But if I want to watch something about the Premier League on the BBC, watch Match of the Day.
Well, they lost the Football League rights to Channel 5, the highlights and all that, so I guess they can't really.
So what do? They fit up with more Premier League. You see, I don't, as much as I am a Premier League football fan, I don't like the over-focus on it, because in English football, we do have the best pyramid in the world in terms of football. We've got the most competitive football. We've got the best lower leagues in the world. I think we need to have a bit more of a focus on that and just kind of get away from it's all Premier League. It's always got to be just about getting to the Premier League. It's a hell of a lot more than that.
But I guess you've got the BBC, though. They've got the BBC Sport budget cuts that have seen, Formula One's gone. You've got the football leagues, I say. You've got the golf and a lot of other sporting rights, which the BBC are losing, and I guess. In one way, I think they're pretty lucky to retain Match today, you know, that it's not been chosen to be cut.
It's just one of those things. If anyone was going to be able to sort of increase the interest, it's not what they did with the FA Cup. They managed to increase the interest in the FA Cup by bringing it back down to sort of what the fans want. It's about the little teams. It's about the whole process of going through the lower stages and building your way up. I think if anyone was going to be able to do that kind of thing, again, for some lower league football, it was going to be BBC. It wasn't going to be someone like Sky who were just so focused on the Premier League.
No, they've got the FA Cup though.
Yeah, I know, but I think the fact that they sort of they've lost the rights about these people lose the rights, it's kind of a part of that they didn't fight for it too hard. And the fact that they're replacing them with another Premier League show is sort of, you have to wonder with sort of younger fans coming through, fans who are now only discovering football, are they going to be likely to go and pick a lower league side to go and because it's Premier League, it's Premier League, every single media. Every single bit you're going on online, it's all about Premier League. Unless you have to be lucky enough to have a dad or a mum who's going to take you to the local games, I think it's harder and harder to even just end up in a position where you, by chance, support one of these teams. Because that's how everyone ends up supporting a team, if I'm being honest. It's just pure luck of where you were born and what team you went to go and see first and what shirt you got for Christmas that one time you got one. And so I think it's just going to be harder and harder to get that interest in lower league football.
I took him along to watch Mac on the first game of the season last week, and he's been made a ball boy, actually, for the club.
And that kind of thing's fantastic, but you also have the thing of the more expensive games are to go and take your kids to go and see. It's harder and harder for people to get, the young people, the people who haven't discovered football yet, the people who are going to become the fans of the future into those lower league games. The interest is sort of dripping away from it. I do worry about that, because that is the lifeblood of the game.
All right. Just want to ask a slightly lighter topic question. Do we think Gary Lineker will present Match of the Day in his underwear this Saturday?
Yeah, I think he's got it now. But first, it wouldn't be surprising about the underwear he's wearing. Like sponsored by Paris Pouch.
Borrowed it from Nicholas Pentner.
Picture of Ranieri on the front of his pants.
I'm hoping for a full body Borat style Nike, technically pants.
It is after 10 PM at night, but it'll be funny. But I think I think Lineker's a legend. Though. It was so funny at the end of last season, and he was just. I just love his early. I just love the final comment he always makes. He's like, Jamie Vardy, hope you're on the party. Good night, and stuff like that. I think it'll be funny.
Well, we've gone on a few tangents, but we'll move on to the final round of the quiz. Right, we'll start with Shane. So you're on 2 points, you've got 6 questions. Which set would you like? I've got set A, B or C.
I'm going to go for Magic B.
Magic B, oh.
Magic B.
Okay, set B, okay. First question, when was the last time a newly promoted side won on the opening day in the Premier League?
2007.
No, it was 2012.
This is fun in the bloody dark, wasn't it?
Okay, which Premier League club has won 5 of their previous 6 opening day fixtures?
Chelsea.
I'm afraid it was Man City.
Sure.
which Argentine scored the first goal of the Abramovich era at Chelsea?
Oh, piss, I know this one.
Oh, I remember that goal very well. It was heartbreaking.
Would it? Oh no, what's his bloody name? Give me a sec. Crespo. Crespo, it's not me.
No, it was Veron.
That was not all we ever did for him as well.
Crespo, won the goal, Wigan.
Which Middlesbrough striker scored a hat-trick on the opening day against Liverpool in 96?
I don't even know if I can name Middlesbrough strikers. Jesus. Who was this against Liverpool?
Against Liverpool in 1996, Middlesbrough striker.
Scored a hat-trick.
I'm literally going to name like the only Middlesbrough striker I can remember, and that's Ravanelli.
Correct.
That was correct, sir.
Okay, sick.
Brendan Rodgers' first game as Liverpool boss ended in a 3-0 defeat, but against which side?
Ooh,
I remember that.
Yeah, no, I can remember. When was he even in charge? Hang on a sec.
That's not in the question.
Was it West Brom?
It was West Brom. Okay, and your final question. Which Spanish player scored twice for Swansea on his incredible debut in 2012? It was.
I just meet you, and this is Craig.
Rich, would you like set A or C?
I'll go A.
Ooh. Okay, set A for Richard. Which team has drawn the most games on the opening day of the season?
Ooh.
Rich?
Give me a league.
So
it's going to be a team that's been in the Premier League years. It's presumably just Premier League.
All the questions are Premier League only. Sorry, yeah.
A team that's been in the Premier League one of the longest, so I will go for Everton.
Correct. Interesting fact, they drew their last three games, they've drawn the last three games 2-2.
Wait, did you just guess that?
Oh, no, I was thinking, like, which team are a winning team all often in the Premier League, but also not near the bottom?
So it's a guess. Because that would literally be my exact guess as well. That's
no, I was thinking it's going to be either them or Villa, but Villa have probably been near the bottom a bit more than ever.
Okay. What year was the last time the defending Premier League champions lost on the opening day of the season?
2013.
No, it's a trick question. They've never lost on the opening day.
Oh.
Who holds the record?
Silence. She's not even going to argue.
No.
Which player holds the record for scoring the most goals on opening days with a total of 8?
Henri
is incorrect. It's Frank Lampard.
Again, I just went with who scores a lot of goals.
Which Sheffield United player scored the very first goal in the Premier League in 92?
Brian Dean.
Correct. Lord Bentner played in midfield as Arsenal beat which side 6-1 in
2009?
6-1 on opening day. Oh, I know this one.
It was Everton, wasn't it?
It was Everton. So, if you get this one, you'll be ahead of Shane. Ijoker Johnson scored the winner for Chelsea in Mourinho's first game in the Premier League in 2004, but against which side?
Ugh. Mourinho's first game. It was against us.
Man United, your answer?
Yeah.
Correct answer. So that puts you on to a total of 6 points. So one ahead of Shane. So Nick, it's over to you. You've been left with set C. So first question, which side has collected the most points on the opening day in the Premier League era?
Oh, no. I'll go for Man United.
Chelsea. Which team has the worst record over the last 6 years in opening fixtures, losing 4 and drawing 2?
Opening day over the last 6 years. Losing 4, drawing 2, you say?
Of the last 6 years.
We'll go for Everton, because that was said. Everton.
Stoke City. Which current Premier League player has scored the most goals on opening day?
Current Premier League player?
Yeah. With 6.
Defoe?
Wayne Rooney.
Oh, you bastard.
In what year did Sergio Aguero put in what Joe Hart described as a decent performance on his debut, scoring twice against Swansea?
What year? 2011.
Correct. Which player scored a hat-trick for Coventry to beat Chelsea 3-2 in 1997?
God, Coventry striker in 1997. Oh, I can't think of anyone.
It's Ravanelli.
country striker.
You literally haven't got a single Coventry player in your head, have you?
No. Just gambling. Can I Les Ferdinand?
Hmm?
Les Ferdinand?
No, it's Dion Dublin.
Who now presents Homes Under the Hammer, doesn't he?
He does. He does. It's very, he's a very good presenter.
Is he not the one who killed someone with his car?
No.
I don't think so.
Well, good then. sorry,
Luke McCormick, Plymouth keeper. Right, your final question. Reece Oxford won man of the match last season as West Ham beat Arsenal by what scoreline?
2-0.
It was. So after that, Nick has ended up on 5 points. Shane has also ended up on 5 points, but our winner of the quiz with 6 is Richard.
Hooray.
Congratulations.
I think that's the first quiz I've won in about 6 months.
I think it's the first quiz you've won this season.
The season has only just started today.
Okay, so to finish the show, we'll do some predictions for this weekend's games as it's first week of the season. So to start with, it's Hull versus Leicester, which kicks off 12:30 on Saturday.
I think we all know it's going to be a whole 5-0.
Well, Ranieri said ET's more likely to be in London than Leicester winning the league again, and they should be 6,000-1 this season. I don't know if that's because he wants to put a bet on it himself, or whether he genuinely believes that, or it's mind games. Or
I mean, that's the kind of thing when you say if you flip a coin and it's heads 20 times in a row, it should be tails the next time, but it's still the same ones before. I think Leicester are easily going to win this opening game. They're going to have a bit of fire in their bellies after between the Shield and Hull are just not a team at the moment, are they? They barely exist.
Well, they don't have a manager, do they? They don't have a manager at the moment, do they?
Absolutely gash, aren't they? So then they'll completely surprise everyone and win like 1-0.
Champions League finish this year.
Only get 1,000-1 on them to win the league, unfortunately. All right, so we're all setting a Leicester win, I presume.
I'm going to go with a shock 1-0 win for Hull.
Okay.
You would, wouldn't you?
Yeah.
I'll say 3-1 to Leicester.
2-0 Leicester for me.
2-1 Leicester.
Burnley versus Swansea, 3 o'clock kickoff.
I fancy Burnley for that one.
Swansea. That's a relegation dogfight straight away.
You think so? Burnley have got some good momentum coming into the season, and Swansea, it's all chaos, isn't it? They just don't know what kind of team they're even going to be able to have by the end of this transfer window. So I think because of a sort of uncertainty, you've got to go with Burnley, especially when they've got the whole team effort coming forward. I'm going to go Burnley 2-0.
Yeah, I'll go Burnley 1-0.
I'm going to 1-0 draw.
I'll say Burnley 2-1. We'll move on to Palace versus West Brom.
2-0 Palace.
Yeah, it's got to be Palace. West Brom are just one of those teams that haven't even... Have they even made it? Matt Phillips, I'm pretty sure it's the only signing they've made this season.
Yeah, I think you're right.
That's just so uninspired.
They've kept Marino, though.
Oh, good. He's a lovely chap. I just love how reasonable and calm he is on Twitter. No, come on, Crystal Palace.
2-3-0. Yeah, Palace for me, 1-0.
I'll say a 0-0 draw. A really dull game last on match of the day. more interesting game, I reckon. Everton versus Tottenham.
1-0 draw.
This is where I'm going to say this is going to be the dull game. This is 0-0.
2-0 to Spurs.
I think Spurs will win as well. I think Spurs have been overlooked a bit in people thinking about next season. And I think it'll be a good game. I reckon something like 3-2 Spurs.
Mentioned it in like the review of the teams coming up is that they might have a bit of a Euros hangover.
Mm-hmm. All right, Middlesbrough Stoke.
That's the game no one cares about.
No, I think that would be a good game.
Actually, no, I do reckon it would be a good one, but I was just like, no enthusiasm whatsoever. I personally reckon if there's going to be any interesting game in this set, it's going to be this one. They both got goals in them, those teams. They both like to try and play, so I reckon it will be 3-2 to Stoke.
I think it's...
The reason I was quiet on it was just because it was one of them games where I could see either side easily winning.
Mm.
I'll go 3-3.
It's a game, it's hard to predict. I'll say 1-1.
Yeah, 1-1 for me as well.
That's the default score, isn't it, if you don't know what to say. Southampton versus Watford. Is Shane Long going to come up with the goods this week, Shane?
We don't tend to have a very good record on the opening day, so I'm going to have to be like pessimistic and say 1-1. But we'll be good after that game.
It's better than Stoke's record on the opening day.
I'm going to go 1-0 Watford.
I reckon 2-1 Southampton. The final Saturday game, Manchester City plays Sunderland at 5:30, the evening kickoff. This is on BT as well, just for interest. They've moved it so that BT get the Saturday evening kickoffs rather than the Saturday lunchtimes.
5-0 City.
I'm gonna be a Richard. 1-0 Sunderland.
Do you genuinely believe City. That or?
No, genuinely. Man City always have a habit of just losing the games, and you always think they should easily win that. And it's always bloody Sunderland, isn't it?
But
it doesn't matter who's managing Sunderland. It's always Sunderland.
If he was at Sunderland, possibly, but at the empty ad, I think City will turn him over.
I think a 4-0.
Guardiola's first game as well. You've no idea how it's going to go.
It's a shame it's not against Big Sam.
that'd be a proper Premier League test.
We'll move on to Sunday. Bournemouth against Man United is the 1:30 lunchtime kickoff. Mourinho's first test.
2-1 United, two very late goals, I think.
3-1 United.
1-0 United.
I think 1-0 United as well. I think it'll be a close game.
Arsenal v Liverpool.
Yeah, that's the 4:00 kickoff on Sunday.
I think for Arsenal, it's like, who've they got a centre back for this game?
Well, it looks like they might have to play Rob Holding there.
Well, who with?
Gabriel's out, Mertesacker. It'd be Koscielny, won't it, I think?
No, it's not too. Well, at least he got one centre back in there. It's going to turn out that Rob Holding has an absolute blind, isn't it? But I think Liverpool are going to win this one.
I guess the other option is playing Monreal at centre back and Kieran Gibbs at left back. But yeah.
I think Liverpool are going to win, and Arsenal fans, including Piers Morgan, are going to go into absolute Twitter meltdown.
Yeah, that's a pretty good prediction for near enough every game in Arsenal season. I think this will be Arsenal's year finally. I mean, the Arsenal fans are coming like Liverpool fans, saying that every single year, but I do think it's this one. I reckon 2-1 Arsenal.
I think 2-1 Arsenal, but I don't think it's going to be Arsenal's year, unfortunately.
There's nothing better than an Arsenal fan in meltdown.
Talk Sport.
Final game Monday night, Chelsea play West Ham.
I'm going to go Hammers. I like the look of what they're doing there. 1-0 West Ham.
I think it'll be a good game. I reckon a 2-2 draw myself.
I'll go Chelsea 1-0, the new part of the revolution starts.
I think it'll be 1-0.
Alright, well, I think we've reached the end of the show, unless there's anything else anyone wants to mention. Alright, well, you can check out our new website, v2football.com. Chris Lappin's hosting a new show, the V2 Academy, which you can check out. It's good night from me, and it's good night from Nick, Shane, and Richard.
Good night.